Welcome to Crazy Good Turns. Our goal is to celebrate people who do good deeds, big or small. We discover our stories through research and with help from you, our listeners. Visit our website at crazygoodturns.org/celebrate to tell us about a person or organization who's done something great for someone else. And they could be featured on an upcoming episode. As always, thanks for listening.
It was a Friday, October 20th. And I woke up that morning, and I got to tell you, it was the best day of my life. I mean, it was, the whole thing was a dream come true, and going to classes and going to the pregame meal and being in the locker room. And Division I, it's just a whole different experience.
That's Travis Roy talking about the night he played his first Division I hockey game for Boston University. The year was 1995, and BU was the best college team in the country at the time. He says getting to that locker room was a dream come true.
You got the Terrier mascot woven into it, and you got your name etched on the nameplate above it, and there's pictures of past BU hockey players who had realized their own dream kind of up on the wall, and, you know, I got custom-made hockey sticks, and as I say, every little piece of it was what I dreamed of and envisioned, and, you know, it all came to fruition that night.
Travis was a great hockey player, good enough to play in the first game of the season his freshman year, with very real aspirations to play in the NHL. Instead, Travis ended that night paralyzed from the neck down. Since that fateful October, Travis has dedicated his life to helping others with catastrophic spine injuries like his through a nonprofit he founded called the Travis Roy Foundation. And he's brought his inspiring message to thousands as a gifted public speaker. Today you'll hear about the tragic accident that brought Travis's first dream to an end, but also sparked a new one. And you'll find out how a person can take one of the worst moments of their life and turn it into something incredible by simply learning to appreciate the little things in life. This is Crazy Good Turns. We tell inspiring stories about people who do amazing things for others, and I'm your host, Brad Shaw. Travis Roy started skating shortly after the age most of us learned to walk. His dad managed an ice arena in their hometown of Augusta, Maine. As a boy, Travis spent most of his time at the rink.
I loved every minute of it. And at 20 months old, about a year and a half, my dad, he found a pair of skates small enough to fit on my feet and brought me down to the rink, and he sat me down, and I just kind of skated away. I took to it rather naturally. So hockey was something that was definitely on my mind from a very early age, something that was fun, that I enjoyed. And it wasn't long before it was a passion. It was kind of unique to latch on to something that young and to be driven by something that gave me so much pleasure.
Travis was a natural on the ice. His hockey skills and pure love of the game made him a standout at a young age. He played on travel teams that took him all over the Northeast and Canada.
I remember at 12 years old, I went to a big international tournament in Sweden that was a lot of fun, and just started to have a lot of unique opportunities around the game. But probably the one that was most unique and kind of gave me a leg up on the competition was eventually, my father, he moved to become the director of security at the Cumberland County Civic Center in Portland, Maine. It's a big arena in Portland, and they had a minor league affiliate at the time. It was originally with the Philadelphia Flyers and then the Devils and eventually the Bruins. And I would go in every Saturday night with him, and I would just kind of hang around the rink and watch. And by the time I was about 12 or 13 years old, I kind of became the stick boy for the local team. And so I got to be in the locker room, and I'd sit in the penalty box, and I'd watch them play, and I'd go to their practices. And I got quite an education just being around hockey at that level. A lot of guys that moved on to the NHL.
Travis became a true student of the sport he loved so much and developed a competitive, never-give-up spirit. It's something he still carries with him today.
I was always one to listen, to watch, to learn, to emulate, whether it was somebody out there on a minor leaguer or whether it was somebody that was out on the ice with me or as an opponent that was just a little bit better than me, and I was always trying to figure out, well, what made him better and how could I take that skill from them?
By the time Travis was a senior in high school, he'd gotten scholarship offers from every major hockey program in the country. By choosing Boston University, the defending champs at the time, Travis achieved one of the three goals he had in life: play Division I hockey, reach the NHL, and one day play for the U.S. Olympic team. At BU, he was among athletes of that caliber. One of his teammates at the time was Chris Drury, who went on to become an NHL standout.
He won a national championship at BU the previous season. He was kind of the Heisman Trophy winner, known as Obi Baker in college. He went on to the NHL. He was the Rookie of the Year. He won a Stanley Cup championship with the Colorado Avalanche. He won 2 silver Olympic medals. And he was my line mate. I would say he was definitely a little bit better than me, but how much better, I don't know. And how close of a career could I have had to his? Or there were a lot more teammates that had very short professional careers, or not at all. I don't know. I'll never know where I would have fallen in that grouping, but I knew that I was close.
Travis excelled early in team practice. The night before the season opener, his coach Jack Parker told him he'd be the first freshman to step onto the ice that season. But soon after, his dreams were shattered in an instant. On the night of BU's first game of the season, their home arena was packed. Travis says you could feel the electricity in the air as the national championship banner was raised over the ice. 2 minutes into the game, BU scores and the crowd goes wild. Coach Parker decided it was time to give his freshman star a shot on the ice.
I felt the tap on the back of my shoulder, and Coach Parker kind of signaled to me, and I hopped over the boards and lined up for the faceoff with my teammates, and we won the faceoff, and the puck got dumped into the offensive zone, and I just skated in there just as fast as I could, and opposing defenseman was going to gain control of the puck, and I was right on his tail, and I thought I'd deliver a big check and keep the momentum and make my presence known. And as I followed through to hit him, I just didn't hit him as squarely as I had intended. And he moved out of the way a little bit, which is naturally, you generally try not to get hit too squarely. And I lost my balance. And I fell headfirst into the dashboards and hit my head and kind of flopped to the ice.
Travis's parents, his sister, and his girlfriend were all in the arena, watching from the stands. Travis says he and his dad had a rule throughout his hockey career. When you get hurt, you don't lie on the ice. You get back up and you play.
After the doctor and the trainer had come out and they were evaluating, I had actually asked him. I said, can you find my dad? You know, he's up in the stands. And they found him. And sure enough, I heard the same thing he always kind of usually was yelling it from the bench. You know, come on, let's be tough. Get up. There's a game to be played. And when he knelt down, I said, no. I said, Dad, this is different. I'm in big trouble. And
at that moment, did you know that this was something permanent, or did you have hope that it was something you could recover from?
No, within that moment, I knew. I didn't know anything about paralysis. I didn't know anybody that was paralyzed. But it's a unique injury in that I knew right away that it was very serious, and I knew that most likely my life was over as I knew it. I knew when they put me on the stretcher and took me off that ice that my hockey career was over, and really, in the bigger picture, my life was over as I knew it. And I had no idea what was to come, and it was just a heavy sense of sadness, just knowing that it was all over. I had worked really hard to put myself in that position and in that moment to live that dream, but when I was on that stretcher, I knew it was all over.
Travis had broken his 4th and 5th cervical vertebrae and did significant damage to his spinal cord, leaving him paralyzed from the neck down. What followed, he says, was a nightmare. He spent months on a ventilator, unable to breathe or speak on his own. To communicate, he could only answer yes or no questions, blinking once for yes and twice for no.
It's just devastation, just outright devastation to every aspect of your life. To my parents, my sister, my friends. You know, you kind of live through life trying not to take things for granted, and you think that you're doing a good job of that. But then all of a sudden, you know, you can't breathe, you can't even stand up, you can't put a piece of food in your mouth.
Meanwhile, Travis's story spread. As video footage of his accident made its way to television sets across the country, letters, cards, flowers, and fruit baskets poured into his hospital room, lifting his spirits. Many people sent money, even though the family had not asked for it. About 3.5 months after the accident, Travis was stable enough to be transported to Atlanta's Shepherd Center, a world-renowned rehabilitation center for patients with catastrophic spinal cord and brain injuries. While there, Travis came across a woman who was near hysterics.
Her son was a little younger than me. I think he was 18, 19 years old. And he'd also had a spinal cord injury. And they'd been in the hospital for several months and they were ready to bring him home, and the insurance denied the hospital bed, that they weren't going to pay for it. The financial strain with paralysis is enormous, and insurance covers some of the basic needs, and depending on your policy, and that was her breaking point. She just didn't know how she was going to bring her son home. They'd already spent a decent amount of money on some renovations, and it was really hard to watch. And it gave me the idea that maybe we could use the attention that my story kind of continued to get to help out other people in the same condition.
There are about 18,000 spinal cord injuries in the U.S. each year, and the lifetime cost to the patients can be just crushing. Someone with an injury like Travis's can spend over $1 million on treatment, rehabilitation, and living expenses the first year alone. The total cost can soar up to $5 million over a lifetime. Travis says he's fortunate to have good insurance, 24/7 care, and a network of family and friends standing by for support. But many aren't as fortunate and have difficulty covering the lifetime of ancillary expenses that the injury brings. A wheelchair ramp into their home, a special medical bed and ceiling lift, car modifications, a wheelchair-accessible shower. These were all things Travis saw his fellow patients struggling to pay for, and he wanted to help. So he reached out to a lawyer friend of the family to help file for nonprofit status and launched the Travis Roy Foundation. Its focus then and now is to raise and grant money for adaptive equipment and for research to find a medical breakthrough, something Travis says gives him hope.
I don't know that I'm going to walk again, or certainly probably not going to play hockey again, but for me, I just want to be independent again. You know, to be able to use my hands, to be able to use my arms, to be able to get myself dressed, to be able to drive a car again.
Travis says their efforts started small, with a single golf tournament that raised about $50,000. That allowed him to make a few initial grants and fund a small amount of research. And he found a new passion to fill the void that hockey left in him the night of his injury.
It's very clear to me now, but those first few grants, those first helping people's lives out was, it gave me a purpose. It gave my life purpose. I did eventually go back to school 10 months after my accident. And I worked on my degree, and I got my degree 4 years later, and I've created a career through as a motivational speaker, and that's been a lot of fun. But that's given me a sense of purpose too. But really, the foundation, it's given me purpose, and that's it feels good to have that, to know that my life has meaning, and it feels even better to know that my purpose comes with the benefit of making other lives a little bit easier.
Since its founding in 1997, the Travis Roy Foundation has distributed more than 1,400 adaptive equipment grants totaling $5 million and funded $3 million in spinal cord injury research. Unfortunately, there are new needs every day.
We were just kind of hanging out, swimming, and having a good time, and it was getting late. It was dark. I just lit the fire for some s'mores. We were all going to sit around and have some s'mores, and when I got back up on the deck where the pool was, everybody was, hey, jump back in, Les, one more time, jump back in. Well, I can't tell you how many times I have relived that moment and wish I would have said, no, I'm okay.
That's Les Foster, describing an evening in his backyard in 2016. He and his daughter had just moved to Connecticut to start the second half of his life with his fiancée, Amy, and they were hosting friends for a day of cooking out and swimming into the night.
Instead of jumping in, for some odd reason, I dove in, and I remember feeling the shock that went through my entire body. I wasn't sure exactly what had happened. I just, you know, I felt the shock, and I'd come back up, and I remember grabbing a breath.
The last thing he remembers from that night is a paramedic loading him onto a board and into an ambulance. Days later, he woke up in the hospital with Amy by his side. Doctors told him he had broken his C4 vertebrae and damaged his spinal cord. Like Travis, Les was a quadriplegic.
They told me it was a C4 break, which, you know, there's a level on your body that controls up to the C4, and that was right at your diaphragm and across your shoulders. They weren't sure. I guess that was a toss-up whether or not I was going to be able to breathe on my own again. But I didn't know whether or not. At that point, I was unable to breathe on my own, so they weren't sure. They weren't real sure what was going to happen.
As Les slowly recovered, he was able to spell out words with Amy's help by blinking at a chart with the alphabet. The first words he spelled out, no diving. Les says that sealed the deal for Amy.
I think at that point, too, my wife had seen the dark side of what this injury can do to you and how you can come out of it. And so I think once she seen that I was going to fight as much as I possibly could. I think that's when she wanted to promise me that she would be by my side forever as well.
Les says the fact that Amy didn't leave him is what kept him fighting. His progress surprised his doctors. After about a month, he came off the ventilator and was able to try food again through a feeding tube.
Yeah, they started off with, you know, just different things, pudding, ice cream, and to make sure. And I was able to do all these things, and I was able to drink. And, you know, they were really kind of amazed at what was going on. And, you know, I think my wife had shot the gun a little too quickly, but went out and bought me a hamburger. That was the first food I'd had in probably, probably a month and a half.
That must have been the best hamburger you've ever had.
Oh, you know, it was not only like the best hamburger, but it was, you know, just the whole scene. A couple of my friends that I'd went to high school with had come from Indiana. They went to this tavern in Boston and brought me back this hamburger that was, yeah, it was absolutely amazing. Just to have the friends there, my wife there, and I was, you know, eating this hamburger, and yeah, hadn't even gotten to the testing of whether or not I should be eating this kind of food. My doctor had come in the next day and literally had ripped out my feeding tube and said, you know, I think you're going to be just fine.
Once home, Les and Amy faced the exact obstacles that the Travis Roy Foundation helps people overcome. Les is a big guy, and Amy's petite, so getting him in and out of bed and into his wheelchair would be impossible without an overhead bed lift. And the lift that their insurance company approved wouldn't work in their house. A friend who was a regular donor to the Travis Roy Foundation suggested they apply for a grant, and within 2 weeks, they were approved. Today, the lift that the foundation paid for allows Les to take a shower, roll into the living room to hang with the kids, and chill out in the backyard. Les eventually got to meet Travis at a fundraising event, and the two remain friends.
There's plenty of people out there that have spinal cord injuries. Just the fact that within a few minutes, he had changed my outlook on life. Within 2 weeks, he had bettered my wife's life and my life of ease of getting in and out of bed and to be able to live our lives, I guess, a little bit better.
And despite all the difficulties he faces, Les says he loves his life.
I think to one night in a blink of an eye, change your life. And, you know, not knowing what you're going to do and have this woman that it'd take me hours to explain how great she is, tell you she's going to spend the rest of her life with you despite your injury, to have a guy that wants to support you due to your injury. And like I said, such a short time with kids, you know, that surrounded me that weren't afraid, that weren't scared. It's just, that's, I guess, the amazing part of this life. I don't think in this situation I could have it any better.
In the past 20 years or so, Travis has discovered there's a whole lot more to life than he thought possible after his injury. A couple of years ago, Travis got to do something he'd always loved growing up, and that he thought he'd never get to do again, go fishing, on a boat, with his dad. One of his friends had a fishing boat and knew a guy with an old mobile military crane they used to hoist him onto the deck.
And then it happened to be that the boat was just full of dads and sons, and my dad came along for the trip, and the other kids were a little younger, probably from, 10 to 14, 15, and it was a day of simplicity, just fathers and sons, fishing poles, eating a sandwich, having a Coke, and just taking in the beauty of it. And those are the moments. I mean, those are the moments that make life rich. It's not a fancy car. It's not a big house. It's moments when you get to interact with people you care about and to enjoy a unique experience and just have good company and good conversation. And that's what, those are the moments that I realize are most important. And it doesn't matter if you're in a wheelchair, or if you're a star hockey player, you can enjoy that moment just as fully.
So what'd y'all catch?
So we caught a little bit of everything. We caught sea bass. We caught bluefish. We caught black bass. We caught a bunch of little sharks. We caught everything that there was to catch. That was a cherry on top, I guess. I just enjoyed being out on that water and being in the atmosphere.
That's cool. And, you know, in that story, you're quoted as saying that you can take in a moment or experience in life like not many people can. Can you just describe what you mean by that?
Well, when you're paralyzed, you have to sit, you have to watch, you spectate, and you realize how people get so caught up in things that they think are important that just really aren't. They're stuck on a cell phone. They miss the bird, you know, kind of flying by, or they miss the, you know, the beautiful flower. They miss the kind of the sunset, or they take a quick peek up and then they're back, you know, kind of off doing something. And life sounds kind of crazy because life becomes very simple, or what's important in life becomes very simple. You just put some sun on my face and you give me something nice to look at, or you give me a thought-provoking conversation. You put something in my mouth that they haven't tasted before, or, you know, something that I love to eat. You know, it's just paying attention to our senses, you know, our smell, our sight, the touch. It's just trying to use all those senses in the most simple of moments to really makes you think that this is pretty good.
Travis and Les had the biggest obstacle you can imagine thrown in front of them. Their lives turned completely upside down in the blink of an eye. The things we all take for granted, like walking, getting dressed, feeding yourself, driving a car, snatched away in an instant. And yet both will tell you their lives are filled with joy and hope, and sun on their faces, and flowers, birds, hamburgers, and fishing, and a network of family and friends smothering them with love and support. Sure, they have dark moments and more challenges ahead, but they make the case to all of us that happiness is findable, if you know where to look.
And that's what I tell people when I go to the hospital. You just slowly you get to find the little things that put a smile on your face. And it may take a while to have a whole day full of them, but that's what the key is. And then maybe it's just one little thing, and then you add a second one, and then a third one. And then before you know it, you not only have something to look forward to that week or that month, you've got something to look forward to that day or that night. Or those are the little things that it took me a while to figure out, but that's the key to finding a little bit of happiness in life, is having something to look forward to, always having something to look forward to.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our podcast. Go to crazygoodturns.org to learn more about or donate to the Travis Roy Foundation. You can also submit your ideas for people or organizations we should feature, and stay connected with us between episodes by following us on Facebook and Twitter. Our show is audio engineered by Stephen Key. Music supervision and mixing by Score Score in Los Angeles. Special thanks to Megan Basinger, and I'm your host, Brad Shaw.
There's just different energy out on the water, especially out on the ocean. The smell, the taste of kind of the ocean spray kind of on your face, and just seeing it kind of mist up your glasses.